Page 884.
Yeah, us old people need to know. I can't hear very well.
I know. Okay, we just started this last week. We didn't, top of the page. Okay, Hashem made Pinchas a Kohen. Then Hashem said, okay, we need to count the Bnei Yisrael to figure out how many Moshe Rabbeinu brought and left and all the various different explanations. Hashem spoke to Moshe. To these people, you shall divide the land as inheritance, according to the number of names. Meaning, these were 20-year-olds at the time of the consensus. They got their own age. Now, the Gemara learns out that, you have to understand, when they came into Eretz Yisrael, it took 7 years.
8-8-4.
7 years to conquer the land and 7 years to divide the land. Now, in those 14 years, a lot of people turned 20. But they didn't get. The Torah says, La'ela techole kodesh. To these people that are now 20, that were thus counted, those are the people that are going to get the chelek in Eretz Yisrael. Not the people that turned 20 before the land is divided. Okay? For the numerous tribes, you give a larger inheritance. V'lamatan to the smaller tribes, tamit nachlosei, you make it smaller. Ish the people could have yuta nachlosei, each person according to his count, shall his inheritance be given. We're going to learn two more psukim and then we're going to discuss this whole thing. Ach begeiru yecholik asa'oretz, the land should be divided by lottery. The Shmeis Matis of Esam Yencholu, according to the names of their father's tribes, which shall they inherit. In other words, if the father came from one tribe, the mother came from a different tribe, the child would follow the father, and he would get inheritance of that. According to the lot, a person's inheritance will be divided, whether it's a lot or a little. Okay? So basically, it sounds very simple, but it's so complicated. There's a lot of discussion in the Mefoshim exactly what happened. If you take the Pasuk simply, it means Eretz Yisrael is divided into 12 tribes. Okay, seemingly it means a tribe with more people had a bigger piece of land. The tribe with a smaller piece, smaller piece of land. But there's two problems with that in the inheritance story. Number one, you have more fertile land, better land, and not such good land. So if everybody, is this qualitatively or quantitatively? In other words, when you say more or less, if you got a better piece of land, more fertile, let's say, right? Did you get less property? Okay. And Bechlal, there's many different opinions over here. Well, some opinions say the more bigger, the less lesser. Some of Farshim learned, some opinions in the Gemara, say that if you had more people, like Yehuda had the biggest tribe, they got the biggest piece of land. And other Mefarshim say that's not what happened. Eretz Yisrael was divided into 12 equal parts. This that the Torah says, the more people you are, the bigger land you get, that's within the tribe itself. If a family had more people, they got a bigger, but not that one tribe got more than the others. Because the problem with that is, if you do it lottery, okay, so you have, like we learned, Shimon picked a thing, and then which piece of land they're going to get. So the girdle, yeah, it came out miraculously that Yehuda, the biggest tribe, got the biggest piece of land. But some commentators explain, no, that's not what happened. Yehuda got the same size like everybody else. But in the tribe of Yehuda, because there was more people to the tribe, so each person got a smaller amount than other people from other tribes. That's how they learned. But Rashi says an interesting thing here from the Gemara, okay? It says, L'shmeis matis aveisam, refers what the Pasuk says. When it says, here, Ach b'gedol yecholik asorat l'shmeis matis aveisam yincholik. Rashi, even though in the Gemara there's two opinions, but Rashi brings down the opinion in the Gemara that it went like this. If two brothers left Egypt. Okay, let's say two brothers from a family left Egypt. One of them had one son, one of them had three sons. So now they're dividing the land. This family has three kids, over 20. This family has one land over 20. Now, so based on what the pasuk is saying, the kid with one kid had one quarter, and the other one had three quarters, right? That's what it seems. But Rashi says in the Gemara here, normally the living inherit the dead. Here the dead inherit the living. So Rashi says, according to this one opinion, there's two opinions in the Gemara. According to Rashi's opinion, and Rashi is learning in the Pshat of the Chumash, that's what it means. This family got four pieces, because three kids and one kid, right? So the family got four. But it didn't work three in one. This four pieces of property went back to the dead people that left Egypt. And because there are two brothers, the four properties were divided into two. The three got one half, and the one got the other half. In other words, it went by now, three and one, but after they divided the three and one, or three and two, or four, or whatever it was, it went back to the family leaving Egypt, how it went. So if there's this family now, it's three kids, this one's one kid, so this family is going to get four quarters, because it's four kids, they're going to get four quarters. But now we look back to the people that left Egypt, and there were two brothers left Egypt.
Yes.
So now we're going to cut this land 50-50. Oh, so the guy with one kid is going to get two quarters, and the family with three kids is going to get two quarters.
So what was the benefit of that?
That's the way the Torah wanted it.
They're not going by numbers of family.
Huh?
Better to have no siblings.
Well, then you inherit more money anyway. No, but that's the way they divided up the land. It was very interesting. Because, so why didn't they divide it straight the way it left Egypt? Because then they would only get two pieces of land.
Right.
Now they're getting four pieces of land. Each one is going to get two. Each.
So overall, for each family. You get more land.
You get more land.
Dispersed to your descendants,
right,
is less.
Right.
It could be less or could be more, depending.
Well, if you hold at 74,000 Jews, every person is going to get less. Okay, this is the way the land was divided. But now,
I'm sorry. How did they know what the map looks like? The map of Israel.
They had maps in those days.
Is this from the Meraglim? They came out with a map.
I don't know if the Meraglim came out with a map. They definitely came out. The people knew. The people lived there. There were definitely maps of what the land looked like.
The size of the land. They knew the size.
They knew. Why not? They had measurements. They had things. Why couldn't they measure? They had measurements in those days.
Well, it took 7 years,
to conquer and 7 years to divide.
So 7 years to divide.
It took a long time to get every. You know what it is to get every Jew happy.
But
can you imagine the lines were longer than the gas stations in New York?
Yeah.
The complaints.
The lines are longer.
The complaint department. The returns. The returns.
But here they don't. How do they know what the land looks like if they're not in the land? Later on, when you.
But Hashem, when they made, yeah, it was divided up. The Gadol was made in Yeshua's time, not Moshe Rabbeinu's time.
Right.
Hashem is telling him, when you go into Eretz Yisrael, it's going to be divided that way, in lottery. So that's how they knew.
So at the time of Yeshua, they made the...
Correct. Revolution. Correct. They didn't do it now. Moshe Rabbeinu is telling them now, what's going to be when you go into Eretz Yisrael, and you conquer it, this is the way you're going to divide the land.
Ah, so this is instruction of how to do it. But
correct.
But how to do it right now.
No, they didn't do it. It doesn't say anywhere they did it right now. Of course not. Because they weren't there yet. How could they divide the land? They weren't there. They have to conquer it first.
They don't care about
in
quality.
Advance, they,
they know. They know when they come in, this is the way it's going to work.
They don't
but,
care about
but quality. But we asked a question over here. These two psukim, are contradicting themselves. And this is where we left off last week, so we're going to talk about it. And this is, lottery is not logical. More get more, less get less is logical. Correct? That's seichel. So it says, ach begeidol yecholek es ha'aretz, which means it's done not logical. It's done completely with lottery. Then the next pasuk says, no, more, less, less. So which one is it? Is it seichel? So the Gemara says, the Medrash says, that the miracle was that the Gadol made that the bigger land, the bigger tribe got more people, got a bigger land. But it was a miracle. But the actual instructions of the pasuk is very difficult to understand because it contradicts it. It's either Gadol or it's seichel. Which one is it? So Chassidus explains, because this is not only for the division of Eretz Yisrael, this also applies to the way a Jew has to serve Hashem. Conquering Eretz Yisrael, we discussed already, means conquering the seven nations, refers to conquering the seven bad midos that the Jew has. Okay, you have to conquer Eretz Yisrael. In the conquering and division of Eretz Yisrael for Kedusha, it works in two ways. There's a way that works according to Seichel, serving Hashem with Seichel, and there's a level of serving Hashem not with Seichel, above logic. That's the concept of Gadol. We even say in Davening, Ashreinu Matov Chokeinu, Umanoim Gadolenu, Umayofi Rishoseinu. In the service of Hashem, there is logical way of serving Hashem, and there's a way of illogical way of serving Hashem. It says in Chassidus, the Rebbe brings down a Nasich about this, by the way. The Rebbe says that every Jew has a key mitzvah, which is the key to all the other mitzvahs. In the Gemara, they have it, in the Zohar has it. They ask the question to the child of a certain tzaddik, Avuch b'may have a Zohar tzvei. What mitzvah was your father most careful about? That means there's a mitzvah. And Chassidus explains, Zohar doesn't only mean careful. Zohar means Zohar to shine. What mitzvah did your father shine with? What does this mean? When Hashem gives mitzvahs to a Jew has to keep all mitzvahs that are applicable to keep. It's today is not 613, it's 200 something mitzvahs today that we need to keep. But there's one mitzvah which is the pet mitzvah, the key mitzvah, to all other mitzvahs. And the Rebbe explains, that is the level of gadol of lottery. Because this is a mitzvah that's not logical. Hashem says, for you, this is the mitzvah. For you, that's the mitzvah. Every person has the key pet mitzvah, the mitzvah that's called Zohir Tvei, that you shine with, which is the key to all the other mitzvahs. How does a person know which is their pet mitzvah? How do you know? So the different places it says different things. Sometimes it says the mitzvah that we find hardest to keep, that is the key to all other mitzvahs. Why? What's the seichel behind it? The logic behind it is very simple. The fact that this mitzvah is most important for you, that's why the Yetzer Hara gets most in the way. The Yetzer Hara knows. The Yetzer Hara is a malach. You know, the Yetzer Hara is a messenger from Hashem. The Yetzer Hara knows what is the key mitzvah for you. So therefore the Yetzer Hara will do everything in his possibility to make sure you don't keep it. So if a person wants to know which mitzvah is my gadol mitzvah, which mitzvah is the key to all the other mitzvahs, that is the mitzvah that I find the most hardest to do. Sometimes it says, Hashem puts a person in a situation. For instance, if Hashem gives money to a lot of money to somebody, So obviously Hashem says, your mitzvah is tzedakah. Poor people, they don't have the mitzvah. You can't say their pet mitzvah is tzedakah because it's not shaykh for them to give money. In fact, Alter Rebbe says in Tanya that in the earlier generations, they were learning Torah. And then went davening. And nowadays, Alter Rebbe says, what is the merit of our generation? Tzedakah. In the old days, people couldn't give tzedakah. The imams had nothing to eat. They were broke. They'd, even today, relatively speaking, even the poor people today are wealthier than a lot of the rich people in those days, relatively speaking. So today, the Alter Rebbe says, the schus and the mitzvah of our generation is the mitzvah of tzedakah. In earlier times, was learning Torah, depending what the person is. So the Rebbe explains, there's a level in the neshama of seichel, and then there's a level of the neshama which is geirul. Not only the most important mitzvah to do, the least important mitzvah to do. In Avedas Hashem, you have serving Hashem like nishma, understanding, seichel. And then you have the level of nasa. Or you have the level serving Hashem with understanding, seichel. And then you have what's called Kabbalah Seil. Kabbalah Seil is not something which is rational. It's not l'rav tarbe nachalose v'lamat tamit nachalose. It's not a logical thing, the more and less and whatever it is. It's a level completely higher than seichel. That's the level of geirul. And therefore the Torah is saying, techolei ka'aretz, when you want to conquer Eretz Yisrael, meaning the world at large, or the person by himself, to conquer, make Eretz Yisrael, make Kedusha out of the person or the place that they live, like the Tzemach Tzedek told somebody, famous word of the Tzemach Tzedek, somebody wanted to move to Eretz Yisrael. And Tzemach Tzedek saw that that's not his place. He said, no. She said, but Rebbe, I want to go to Eretz Yisrael. So the Tzemach Tzedek said to me in Yiddish, Mach do Eretz Yisrael, make here Eretz Yisrael. Make here holy. So in the way you conquer Eretz Yisrael, there's two ways of going about it. The Torah says, Ach begoyl yecholek esoret, you have to go above seichel, meaning conquering the world. I'm talking about the person, the mini world, and the world at large. You can't always go with seichel. You have to go above geirul, above seichel, with the essence of the neshama. Go above seichel, and then the Torah says, but at the same time, you need to do things according to seichel. You can't just be wild. You need to do things according to seichel. So both things are the way a person needs to serve Hashem. You serve Hashem basically according to seichel, and at the same time you need to serve Hashem higher than seichel.
Which one comes first? Is it regular?
Nase comes before nishma. That means the basis, the yisod, the foundation has to be, we can do it. Then you have to figure seichel how to do it.
So, tzedakah is seichel.
Giving tzedakah could be according to seichel, and it could be above seichel. Person can make a logical cheshbon with the accountant. Okay, based on your income, this is how much tzedakah you should be giving. Yeah, then you have tzedakah above seichel. You just give more than the accountant says you can give. Let's say. That's also above seichel.
Is that halachically correct?
This is not a question of halachically correct. It's a question of a person's feeling. Like Pinchas. If Pinchas asked the shayla, he would have been told no. Right? Pinchas went above halacha. If a person, if somebody says to you, desecrate Shabbos, God forbid, or else I'll kill you, what does halacha say to do? Desecrate Shabbos. You don't give up your life to desecrate Shabbos, right? Yeah, you have to save your life and desecrate Shabbos. What happens if somebody says, no, I don't care, kill me? He's called a holy Jew. If you would ask a shayla, he went to Beis Din. He said, Beis Din, am I allowed to get killed? The Beis Din would say, God forbid, you have to desecrate Shabbos. But if a guy didn't listen and he went and did it, he's It's called a holy Jew.
It's not considered a sin?
No.
It's not suicide?
No.
Why not?
Because most of the Rishonim disagree with the Rambam. The Rambam says you're not allowed to do it. Most of the codifies say you don't have to do it, but if you do it, you're holy. So that's the two ways of serving Hashem. You have to serve Hashem. I'll give you a very practical example. Going out in the street and asking a Jew, excuse me, are you Jewish? Would you like to put on tefillin? Is not very normal. Trust me, it's not normal. Yeah? Or do you light Shabbos candles? Or, you know, that's not normal. Normal is a person comes into shul, he's coming to daven, you ask, okay, well, you like to wear tefillin, you know. To go out in the street and say, excuse me, so you're Jewish, come put on tefillin, it's not normal. Yeah? So who says you have to always go normal? You have to go sometimes not normal. If the world is so crazy, not normal, so how do you combat craziness not normal by craziness of Kedusha? He tells us, and the Rebbe was in France, before he was a Rebbe. And the Rebbe saw a whole gathering of Jews. The Rebbe saw there was an area with a lot of Jews. The Rebbe got up in a car and started making a lot of commotion. So he drew attention of the people, and then he started talking about Yiddishkeit. Is that normal? 100% not.
Is that the time that you went to jail? No,
it was a different time. But I'm saying that's the level of serving Hashem with a gaidel. Then you have Hashem, it's logical. They appear Lurav Tarbin Nachlosei and Lama Tarbin Nachlosei.
Danger his life for sake of Yiddish God, that's
above Seich. That's what the Rebbe writes. There's no reason in Torah for the mitzvah of Mesiras Nefesh. Because it's not according to Seichel. Something according to Seichel you could give a reason to. Something which is above Seichel you can't give a reason to. So that's why the Rebbe writes, there's no reason, the Poskim write, there's no reason for Mesiras Nefesh in Yiddishkeit, because it's above logic. It's above logic, you can't give a reason. Okay. So this is the division of Eretz Yisrael, the way the land was divided.
So they do both department, the Masecho and the Gaon. They do both the same time.
Yeah. But by the way, there's another interesting thing Rashi says, based on the Gemara. It says, Al-Pi HaGadol. Now, in Hebrew, Al-Pi HaGadol means according to the lottery. But Al-Pi means the mouth. It says that Gadol talked, Rashi says. Al-Pi HaGadol. Here, Hagadol Hoya Medaber. The lottery spoke this, and it says the whole procedure. Elazar was there with the Urim Metumim. You know this. The leader of the tribe Elazar mentioned would approach. He would draw the lot of his tribe, which is remarkable. Rashi quotes from the Gemara. Yeah, he brings that down here in the English. It's the Gemara in Babasra. The Gemara says Elazar called up one of a name of a tribe lit up. So Elazar called up that tribe. Okay, and there are two boxes, like we learned. One with the name of each tribe, and one with the 12 different parts, yeah? So when he called up Shimon, the miracle happened. Shimon came, and he put his hand into the box. He picked up Shimon. Then he picked up the other, which part? And he got that part. And the Gadol said, Shevet Shimon is going to get this and this part. That's why it says, Al pi ha-gadol, on the mouth of the gadol.
So both should be the same description, yeah?
Yep. Yes. So there's a whole argument over here that Rambam learns Eretz Yisrael was divided into 12 equal pieces. Some of Farshim learn it was based on quality of the land, not quantity.
Not size.
Because you have better land than... in fact, the Gemara discusses, if the father left over a property, okay, and two brothers had to divide it, Let's say the father passed away, there's inheritance, both brothers divided. So let's say here's a field, yeah? And there's a river here. On the left side of the field is a river. Right? Now if you're going to divide the field this way, one guy gets the river and one guy doesn't. That's not fair. Okay? So sometimes they would obviously divide the field this way. Sometimes they would divide the fields diagonally. If there are a number of brothers, sometimes the Gemara has pictures of in the Gemara Babasa. Sometimes they actually divided the land diagonally. Because everybody had to get equal quality of the land. A father can have two properties, yeah? One is good fertile land, don't forget it's agricultural, and one was junk. Or not as good. So it's not fair for one brother to take one land and the other brother to take another land. So they would divide the lands. And then, you know, whatever, which way it went, that they should get equal...
Really equal, but it wasn't like the older son get like a little better or something?
No, he gets double.
He gets double. But the quality was same.
Quality was same. In other words, if somebody died with three sons, and one was the firstborn, they divided the property into four. Firstborn got two, and everybody got one.
So quality was all the same.
Quality was divided based on the quality.
This levy doesn't get anything.
No, that's what we're learning now. They don't get anything.
So divided by 11, divided by 12.
Because Yosef, Yosef had two tribes, Menashe and Ephraim.
Yeah, they got what?
Whatever happened to Arab world? Well, did they get anything?
No.
Where did they go?
They didn't get. Remember the guy later on in Chumash that cursed? Earlier in Chumash. What happened? He went out of Beis Din, which tribes did he belong to? And he said, V'shem Imei, Shlem is Basdiv Lil Mati Dan. He said, but your father was a guy, so he didn't get anything. The same thing, what the Gatim? What did they get? They didn't get land, huh?
They got
anything. Not as inheritance of Eretz Yisrael, they were able to buy land. Okay, we're going to see now about Levi. Because
yeah.
It's a very interesting argument, what happened with Levi with the land. Okay, Pasuk 884, Pasuk Nun Zayin. Ve'el, again, this is just counting. Now, Levi had three sons, Gershon, Kohath, and Merari, right?
Yeah.
So Gershon was Mishpachas Gershoni, Kohath Mishpachas Kohasi, the Merari, Mishpachas HaMerari. So these were the three basic sons of Levi. Ele Mishpachas Levi, Mishpachas HaLivni, Mishpachas HaChavreini, Mishpachas HaMachli, Mishpachas HaMushi, Mishpachas HaKorchi, and Kohath Heled HaSamram. Okay, it's a... The middle of Kohath gave birth to Amram. Okay? V'shem Eishes Amram, the name of the wife of Amram, Yecheved Bas Levi, Yecheved, the daughter of Levi, Asher Yolda Eisel Levi B'Mitzrayim, that Levi gave birth to her in Egypt, V'atel L'Amram as Aaron as Moshe as Miriam Achesim. Okay? It's obviously not in order, because Aaron and Miriam were older than Moshe. But it mentions Aaron and Moshe, and then it mentions Miriam. Okay, now, some families, Rashi says, were omitted because they died out or whatever. Okay, let's listen to a few more psukim. We'll discuss this. So it says Aaron had Amram had three kids, right? Moshe, Aaron, and Miriam. So Aaron gave birth to Nadav and Avihu Elazar Nisamar, four kids. Vayamas Nadav Avihu Makriv Meizal Lefnei Hashem. Nadav and Avihu died when they brought this four in fire before Hashem. Vayil Pekudehem was the counting Shleishi Ve'esrim Elef, 23,000. Kol Zalcha Mi Ben Chaydish Vamayla, a month old. Now remember, everybody else was counted at 20. Levi was counted from a month. And yet they only had much fewer than everybody else. Okay? And he says the whole tribe of Levi was 23,000. Why? Kilei haspoktu b'seich b'nei Yisrael. They were not counted, okay, amongst the Jewish people. Why weren't they counted? Because they were not given inheritance and they didn't go to war. So because they weren't given inheritance and they didn't go to war, they weren't counted. But they were counted from a month on. And as Rashi says in Chumash earlier, they should have worthy to be counted from the stomach. And the Torah says why? Because Levi Eishes Amram was Yocheved, okay, that was given birth when they came into Egypt. Meaning like this. When the Torah says the families that went down to Mitzrayim, the 70 families, right? So it says the number of Yaakov's family was 70. So Rashi says if you count them, there's only 69. How do you get 70? So Rashi says the 70th was Yocheved. That was born when they were coming into the walls of the city. They didn't even go to the hotel yet. When they were coming into Mitzrayim, in the walls of the Sibayna Chaymis, Yocheved was born. So you see a unique thing. Yocheved, a day old, not even a day old, made up the number 70. The 70 was the complete number of the Jewish people, because that corresponds with the 70 nations. Mm. Who made up that number 70? A girl, the second she was born. That's Levi. She was Levi's daughter. So Levi really should be counted, Rashi says, from the second they're born. But you have to wait 30 days, you know, to make sure they're going to be alive. So Levi is counted from 30 days old. So the whole tribe of Levi, from the time they were born, I mean 30 days and older, was only 23,000. And all the other tribes had 74,000, 50-something thousand, 40-something, much more, from 20. So we learned already, the reason for that is, why did Levi have less kids than everybody else? Because it says, "Kashayanu esam kenyiber v'chenyifetz." In Parsha Shmos, the Torah says, "The more Pari made the Jews slaved, the more they multiplied." The Jews in Egypt had six at a shot. A normal birth was six at a shot. Okay, Levi, because they weren't enslaved, they only had one at a time. So you can imagine.
It should be reversed.
What?
Because they are free, they can make more keys than I'm...
No, but that was a bracha, Kashi. The more, because Hashem said, the more you're being afflicted, the more children you're going to have. So the Gemara says, she should be kerasech, because it says, Bnei Yisrael, paru vayishuv tov vayirbu vayatzmu b'meid ma'id. Six expressions. The Jews had six at a shot. If they had twins, I guess they had 12. Triplets, I guess 18. But the bottom line is, Levi, because it didn't work, they didn't have six at a time. Each pregnancy had six kids. So therefore, they multiplied much more, and Levi didn't.
That they some of them they
Like it says, Kairach Mishpacha Sekarchi with Kairach's family. They were divided between Kainim and Levium. In fact, another interesting thing, it just says Aaron's kids. It doesn't say Miriam. It doesn't say Moshe's kids. Okay?
Why?
Miriam had children.
Doesn't mention anything in the Torah.
Not here. In where is it? In Yeshua it mentions. Miriam, Moshe ben her sister's husband, Rashi says in Chumash, was Kalev ben Yefuna. Kalev ben Yefuna married Miriam. They had kids. Moshe had two kids, Gershom and Eliezer. But here the Torah is just dividing it up as the Kohanim special and all the other Levim. The Torah is not getting into the details because some of our Shemlut out of respect to Meshe Rabbeinu, his children were not such holy people.
Because they're coming from Ger mother?
No, it was a holy tzaddik. That's dumb. They weren't as great as Meshe Rabbeinu. Huh? That's when you look at it from a therapeutic point of view. He's too busy to spend time with his kids. I'm sure Moshe Rabbeinu was a great father. But you know, later on in Chumash, soon,
but
coming
his
up.
Children were not able to
one
take
second.
His place.
When it says that Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu, you're dying, so Moshe Rabbeinu said, okay, Hashem, you have to appoint a leader. So Hashem says, okay, take Yeshua. So Rashi says in the Medrash, Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, maybe my kids should take over. Now you have to understand, Moshe Rabbeinu was Moshe Rabbeinu Emes. If his kids weren't worthy of being leaders, he wouldn't have suggested it to Hashem. The fact that Moshe Rabbeinu said, maybe it's time for my kids to take over, and Hashem said, no, Yehoshua was your disciple, so obviously they were great.
So why were they?
Because Hashem said to him,
No, I just said they weren't quite so holy.
The Ramban brings down, they imply lack of respect to whose children were not of such stature. Because the grandchildren of Moshe Rabbeinu were not holy at all. They were, one of them worshipped idols, whatever.
So that's what I'm saying. And I mean,
but I don't think it was because he was too busy. Because if you think about it,
it happened.
It happens. But if you think about it, look, Avraham Avinu had a Yishmael, Yitzchak had an Esav.
Yeah.
If you think about it, Moshe Rabbeinu, 40 years in the desert, he was a Jewish leader, but, you know, we find the beginning, until the spies was the first year, and then there's a gap of close to 40 years that Hashem didn't speak to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then Bamidbar Dvarim in the last few months of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. Right? There's a 40-year gap, basically, the 38-year gap. Hashem didn't talk to Moshe Rabbeinu that much. Not that's recorded in the Chumash. See how Moshe Rabbeinu taught. Moshe Rabbeinu was a leader, you know.
So they say that Avram's father was Terach, and he was worshipping idols.
No.
But then son of the Moshe Rabbeinu was not enough to take his place. That
was after the Terach.
I'm saying it. Sometimes a father is not good, the children are good. Sometimes the children are good, the father is not good. That's what I'm
saying. It happens. And that's God's business. Okay, then it's something like this. These are the countings of Moshe. No, I skipped one. Because they were not given Nachla B'Serech B'nei Yisrael. Now, there's an interesting argument in the Rishonim. When Mashiach comes, are the Levim going to have a share in Eretz Yisrael?
Sure. I'm a Levi.
So am I, and I'm a man, so I'm going to probably get more than you. Some Rishonim write, Smag writes, Smag, that there's going to be, when Moshiach comes and he conquers the other three countries, Keni, Kenes, and Kadmoni, that there will be a Levi will get. And other people want to say from the Rambam that from the Rambam it comes out that they will never get. So the question is, why will they get then and not now? So it says, so one of the explanations the Rebbe says in the Sikha is because the Levium now, Hashem said, they're not getting land in Israel because they're mine. Hashem said, they're working for me. So I don't want them to get land in Israel. But it says when Mashiach comes, the whole world will know God. So everybody's going to be the same level as the Levium, so to speak. So then, why can't they get in the new land, which will be conquered later? They're going to get. So somebody should have the opinion that the Levium, when Mashiach comes, will get eventual inheritance of the three extra countries that the Jews are going to conquer when Mashiach comes.
What are they?
It's neighbor, I don't know what they're called, in Keni Kniz and Kadmeini. I don't know exactly what, where they're on the map today, I don't know. But it's a massive expansion of Israel.
Does the land of, like, Jerusalem get redistributed to the biblical owners?
Or? No, Jerusalem is ownerless.
What happens if people bought things there?
It's going to go back, like the Jubilee years are going to come back, and that whole system is going to come back. It's going to go back eventually to the tribe that it originated from, yeah.
They compensate you?
Yeah, they'll get compensation. The insurance company will pay for it. Mm-hmm. No, Yerushalayim was not divided to tribes. In Tilim it says, Irshu Chubro L'Yachtov. Yerushalayim, geographically, was in the tribe of Binyamin. Geographically. But halachically, it's like Lahavdil, brilliant. Washington, D.C. is basically in Virginia or Maryland or whatever, whatever one it is. But it doesn't belong to any state because it's federal. So it's not connected to any state. It's a thing by itself. And Yerushalayim is the same thing. Yerushalayim does not belong in to any tribe.
Federal building.
It belongs to everybody.
We can go get it. I would give it up for Mashiach.
Yeah. Trust me, if Mashiach comes, that should be the least problem, what you're going to do with your land. Yeah. Okay, so he says, Eileb kudei meishiv alozer akeine shepoktos b'nei yisob b'avis mayav. This is the counting of Moshe and alozer akeine, that they counted the Jews b'avis mayav al yarden yerechei. Okay, this is the last counting, as the next pasuk says. Ubeela lohoya ish mipkude meshiv Aaron akena shepoktos bnei Yisrael b'mibresinai. Not one of these people were in the original count that Moshe and Aaron counted in the desert, because all the Jews died out.
Yeah.
Remember, look over the 40 years. When you hit 60 that year, you die. So in the 40 years, anybody who was over 20 died. So the first census, which was between 20 and 60, everybody died. So it says, the only exception to this, by the way, Yeshua and Kalev were. They were the only ones that were left. The Ramban brings down, not that they weren't counted. Yeshua and Kalev, at this counting, were over 60. So they weren't counted anyway. So in other words, the Pasuk says, no man that was in the first census was counted again. So simply it's because they all died out. Yeshua and Kalev didn't die, right? Because they were the good spies. So therefore, but they weren't counted either because they were over 60 by then. And because they were over 60, they weren't counted. That's what Ramban writes. By the way, when the Torah says before, Ach Begoyrol, the Gemara says an expression, ach, means to exclude something. So it says, Rashi said, quoted before from the Gemara, when it says, ach begeiro, it excludes Yeshua and Kalev. Kalev got chevrein. Doesn't say here what Yeshua got. But Kalev got chevrein, kashadib emesha, and it doesn't say here what Yeshua got. So, Yeshua and Kalev personally, their inheritance of Eretz Yisrael was not based on lottery, not based on anything. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I'm giving Kalev Chevron, he got Chevron.
But Chevron was not fertilized.
But Rashi says earlier in Chumash, Chevron was the worst land in Israel.
Right.
It was for cemeteries. Tzoan Mitzrayim was the most fertile land in Egypt. And Chevron was 7 times more fertile than the best land of Israel, of Mitzrayim. This is what Rashi says earlier in Chumash. Chevron, Sheva Shanim, Nifnasa, Lefnei Tzayin, Mitzrayim, Rashi says Tzayim was the most fertile land in Egypt. Chevron was the most unfertile land in Eretz Yisrael, and it was seven times better. Chevron is one of the holy cities.
Maybe they found something else.
I don't know. Okay. So that finishes, so to speak, that story. Okay, let's start next. Perek of Zion, 886. Now that they're dividing up the land, okay, so now there's a problem with one family, Tzlochod. Good. But the Gravna B'nei Tzlochod, the daughters of Tzlochod came, Ben Chayfid, Ben Gilad, Ben Mochid, Ben Menashe, they were from the tribe of Menashe, the Mishpach is Menashe Ben Yosef, Ve'ele Shmeisam, and it says these are their names. Okay? Who were they? Machla, Noya, Chogla, Milka, and Tirtza. These were their names. Rashi says that later on it says Machla and Tirtza. Order difference. Okay, in Parshas Matis it says a different order. So Rashi says over there they were mentioned based on their age, because it speaks about marriage. Here it's mentioned based on their intelligence. Okay? Now the question is, Rashi says, why does it have to say that they came from the tribe of Menashe? It already says Ben Menashe. Okay? Because it sounds like this. Why is the Torah emphasizing they came from Yosef? Because Yosef loved Eretz Yisrael. Where do we see Yosef loved Eretz Yisrael? He said to the Jews, take my bones, and I want to be buried in Eretz Yisrael. His daughters followed, I mean, his great, whatever. They were, Yosef's son, grandson, great-grandson, great-great-grandson, great-great-great-granddaughters of Yosef. Okay. Now it says like this: they came to Moshe Rabbeinu. Lefnei Moshe, lefnei Elazar HaKohen. When did they come? Obviously, Rashi says from the Medrash. From here, you see they came in the 40th year, because Aaron died already. They came before the Elazar HaKohen, meaning they came now. Lefnei Anasiim v'chol Eida Pesach El Meilim. They came with a complaint to Moshe Rabbeinu. Obviously, the question is, they asked Moshe a shaila. So it says, they came before Moshe, and listen to the order. They came before Moshe, before Elazar, before their leaders, and the whole community. Now if you think, if they're asking a question, who would they ask last? They go from the youngest. Do you know the din? No. Do you know the din? No. You go, so they come to Moshe Rabbeinu. I mean, that's normally the way it would work. Correct? Here it orders reverse. So Rashi says, Sirus HaMikra, okay, that because Rashi it says, if Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know the halacha, they're going to go to Elazar. So there's two opinions. One opinion is the Torah's reverse order. Okay, they came to Moshe last. Mm-hmm. And another opinion is, no. Moshe and Elazar, everybody was sitting in the Beis Medrash. And they came to the Beis Medrash to ask a shaila, what's the halach? What did they say like this? Avinu meis b'midbar. Our father died in the desert. V'hu l'hoya b'teicho eida aneodim al Hashem b'adas kerech. He was not part of the kerech community that died. Ki b'chete meis, he died with his own sin, meaning he did not get other people to sin. He was not a bad influence. One opinion says, Rashi says, Rabbi Kiva says he was Mekesha Sheitzim. He was the guy that chopped the wood on Shabbos. Another opinion says he was from after the Meraglim. You know, they said a bunch of guys went up to the mountain to fight, and Hashem said, don't go, you're going to lose. He was one of them. Bottom line is, they came to him, the Moshe Rabbeinu, and said, listen, our father died in his own sin, meaning he wasn't a bad man that got other people to sin. Ubanim lahayulayani, he had no sons. And Rashi says they were so brilliant, the girls knew that if there would be sons, they wouldn't inherit. Even though that din wasn't said yet. They understood that if there would be sons, the girls don't inherit, like the biblical law is. So they said to Moshe Rabbeinu, Lama yigara shem avinu mitech mishpachti. Why should a father's name be omitted? Ki ein le ben, because there's no son. In other words, when dividing up Eretz Yisrael, his family's out of the picture. Because there's no sons. They said, Tana lanu achuze b'techa chei avinu. Please give us inheritance. Why should I? And they did it out of respect to their father. Okay? The Grashi, they were chachmonius. They said, if we cannot have sons, okay, why can't we don't have siblings? We want inheritance, inheritance Yisrael. Give us a chelik. So Pasuk says here a remarkable thing. Vayakri Meisha es mishpatam lifnei Hashem. Meisha Beinu brought their complaint to Hashem. Okay, now, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu know the halacha?
Why did he know it?
Why didn't he know it?
Oh.
Because God told him the halacha already. And Har Sinai heard the halachas. So Rashi says in the Megamara, two things happened over here. One thing was, God made him forget the halacha. Because he bragged. Earlier in Chumash, Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, I'm going to appoint judges. Anything the little things bring to them, and the things they don't know, bring to me. So Hashem says, oh, for Gava, I'm going to show you that you don't know something either. Now, obviously, if you think about it, it's not Gaiva. I mean, think about it. You have a big... No, you never just saw. You have big rabbis, and they have a bezdin. They're the chief rabbi of the bezdin. So they say, listen, either your questions, ask them. If it's something they don't know, come to me. That's not guy. It's reality. On Moshe Rabbeinu's level, it was considered a crime. Because he was so great.
Right.
What did he say already? He knew he got the Torah from Sinai. He knew that Hashem gave him all the halachas. So he says, if you don't know it, come to me. What's the big problem with that? It's not such a thing. So the Medrash says, and the Gemara says he was punished. But there's another thing, Rashi says. Another interpretation. This is remarkable. You know why Hashem made Moshe Rabbeinu forget halacha? He wanted the daughters of Tzelofchad, because of their strong love for Israel, to have the merit that this whole parsha was said because of them. In other words, if they would have come to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe Rabbeinu would have known the halacha, then maybe wouldn't have even mentioned it in Chumash or somewhere else. Rashi says, this is again from the Gemara, it says, it really should have been written through Moshe. They merited that it should go through them because of their love of Eretz Yisrael. Unlike the men, the Medrash says. The men said, let's go back to Egypt. You know, let's go back to Egypt. They said, we want to go into Eretz Yisrael. So the women had a merit way above the men in the love of Eretz Yisrael.
They haven't seen the land. They don't know anything about the land.
But they knew that this was the land Hashem promised.
It's good.
Teva Aretz Ma'ed Ma'ed. They didn't even have to see it to understand how great it is. And therefore they said, we want this land just because Hashem is giving it to us. So they merited, the Pasuk says, but can you imagine something else? And not only that, in the next Pasuk, we're going to leave it for next, but the next Pasuk, Hashem says, the girls are right. you know what it means? For God to say to somebody, you're right. Think about it. Cain ben, yeah, that's the big thing. Cain ben, you see how much love God has? Unlimited. God starts off the next part. Cain ben Esav, they're right. So Rashi says, pray, Ashrei, fortunate is a person that God says to them, you're right. You see the zchus that they had. Not only is there a whole bunch of psukim written over here, 11 psukim, and then later on, then the parshas Masri again. But this is an unbelievable merit that they had because they loved Eretz Yisrael to such an extent that they wanted a chelek of Eretz Yisrael. And the girls were saying, listen, our father did not cause other people to sin. He had his own sin, and everybody sins, so he has no right to lose our soul because of it. Okay.